Now it's time for more of Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's talk hookup. Get ready for more of the best fishing information and the hottest tips on improving your angling skills. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup. Shimano Rods and Reels. Fish with the best. Shimano.
And by
Rancho Leonero, where your wildest Baja dreams come true. And now, Southern California's sports fishing voice, the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Mexa, and Corey Sandin.
And welcome back, hour number two of the Let's Talk Hookup right here on the Let's Talk Hookup app and the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio, Southern California's sport fishing voice right here. And hello to the people in Canada.
Right?
That are listening right now. Your family, right, Elena?
Very special
people. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, maybe two of them. I don't know if it's the whole gang.
Well,
but
maybe we have a few listeners in Canada.
Hey,
maybe, yeah.
One thing. I hope they're enjoying the weather.
Yeah.
In Canada, while we're enjoying our weather here.
Yeah, for sure. Lion and Elena, fisheries biologists, are here. It's so much information, and the texts are rolling in, the calls are rolling in, and we have a lot to talk about today. And we're giving away a fantastic prize thanks to the great people up at Gamakatsu.
Yeah, this crazy new Gamakatsu G bag. It's a $150 value from Gamakatsu. It's a features an extra wide mouth opening, can fit up to five Gamakatsu G box 3700 size boxes or eight of the 3600 utility cases. So you can understand how large that is. It's got a durable 1680 polyester construction and water and slip resistant. I can't wait to see
this. Oh, it's cool. Yeah, it's really cool. And it's like a perfect, it's like a doctor's bag. You know how the doctor's bag stays open?
Yeah.
And you know how bags always close up and you can't get in there? This is what, this one has a wire so it stays open.
Oh.
So you can access all your tackle. It's really cool.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's really cool. Hey, let's find out what's biting out there, Corey.
Yeah, we got Mark on hold there with the fishdope.com report. And focus your offshore fishing on the best areas by using terrapin charts, temperature, chlorophyll, and more. Terrapin is the professional's choice. And dependability and accuracy. Now with Terrapin Mobile, you can download the latest charts on your iPad, iPhone, or Android device. Check Terrapin.com for more information.
Yeah, and here we are, Captain Mark Wich, our private boater buddy and fishdope.com reporter. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, Pete, Corey, Elena, Lyle. Hey, what a great show, man. I love all that science stuff you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
We just really into that. So here we are, guys, end of February, thank God. Almost nearly March 1st, and that's big doings because, well, it's the meteorological spring and the first day of cod fishing. And
Tuesday, right?
It's coming. And, man, we need them codfish biting because, first of all, we love to eat them, catch them and eat them. And the other thing about that cod season opening is that gets all the sport boats and private boats and everybody out just fishing again. So we're going to get a whole bunch more reports from all kinds of area and all kinds of species, and that's all really good news, of course. So in terms of the actual reports this week, you know, it's kind of marginal, pretty slow, actually. Had some weather in the first part of the week. Definitely had a little breeze and some rain and storms and this and that. But it's pretty nice now. It's going to be a nice weekend. So we'll definitely get a little bit of coverage. And then Catalina, you know, that's probably the best game in town right now. It gets a huge amount of focus this time of year, of course, because of that elusive white sea bass that have been known to hang out there. And they're around a little bit. I mean, there's not a lot of fish there at the island yet, but the population is definitely trickling up the way it typically does at this time of year. And like I said, there's been a few caught. And most of what's been caught has been backside east. And that's kind of normal for this time of year. It seems like a lot of times the fish move in there. And that tends sometimes to have a little bit warmer water, so I think it concentrates them a little bit. But it also gets the most amount of coverage is from the guys fishing. So pretty hard to get reports from up west when everybody's fishing down east. So, yeah, don't let that fool you guys. There's fish by this time of year, because I used to be crazy and fish year-round really hard for these stupid things. And there is fish scattered around the whole island by this time of year. And here's another tip for you. For you sea bass killers and want to be sea bass killers, you know, it's obviously a whole bunch more fun to fish daytime. You know, it's warmer. You can see what's going on. It's just so much easier to do what we do.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, to be good at fishing sea bass, you got to fish those things on their terms. And that fish is crepuscular, which I think is probably the worst sounding word in the English language. But
yeah,
look it up.
Crepuscular. Let's ask, what is crepuscular?
You got Lyle's attention.
That means actually.
Well, you got the scientist there, but, you know, that's something that likes to bite daylight and dark and,
yeah,
you know, daylight.
Active at sunrise and sunset.
Sundown and active at night.
Crepuscular. Yeah. It's a new one for your vocabulary.
Yeah. But those things are definitely nighttime biters. You know, this time of year, you're freezing your butt off out there fishing at night. But, you know, it can be very, very productive. And sometimes they only are biting at night. So the nighttime is the right time. Don't ever forget that, guys, for fishing white sea bass. Good situation over there. You know, it's okay. There's a little bit of bait on the front up in that isthmus area. It's been there for quite some time, enough to catch some. And there's been a little bit around the back, a couple different areas, this Bluecat Harbor, and then just above the closure line. And haven't really heard much down east, but there's probably a little bit there for you guys looking around. But it's getting to be that time. And then this time next week, we're going to have some good cutfish reports to go along with whatever else is going on. We've got a decent week of weather coming up, looks like. So
yeah,
it's about time to go fishing, guys.
Yeah, and Danny and the boys at FishDope.com have all the information for you. $20 off a new membership to FishDope.com. Use the code HOOKUPNOW. Lowercase, no space, HOOKUPNOW. Your $20 code, it lasts an entire year when you buy a membership, and it's a great, great value. So how do we find you, Mark?
Well, Pete, we're in Huntington Beach. We're on the corner of Bolsa Chica and Edinger by that big Chevron station. And the phone number at the store is area code 714-840-4262. And the website is PacificEdgeTackle.com. And get your gear ready, guys. It's time to go fishing.
It is time to go fishing, for sure. And we will talk to you next Saturday to get more reports.
You got it, buddy. We'll see
you. All right. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate that. While we're waiting for Marcos at Seaforth, I got to tell you about Western Outdoor News. This week, some great information. Last week, they had a great spring outdoor preview with some big sea bass pictures in there. That's like spring to me, sea bass and yellowtail. That's what spring means to me. And
spring is a favorite time of the year for me, for
sure. Yeah.
I mean, there's just a lot going on.
So be sure to check it out. This week's edition of Western Outdoor News, they're always loaded with the latest and greatest and what's going on up and down the California coast, for sure. And let's go ahead and jump in the phones, Corey, while we're waiting for Marcos.
Yeah, let's do it. They are full. Let's talk to Hills. Hills calling from Ventura. Good morning, Hills. Welcome to Let's Talk Hook Up. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning, Elena and Lyle. Super, super happy about your work that you do, and it's so exciting. But I was going to ask you guys about halibut. About 10 years ago, there was an article I saw in the paper that they had done a stock assessment and that it was a really high number of halibut in the area. And that they were kind of indicating that halibut aren't sedentary and that they actually migrate around. And I thought that was fascinating. And I was wondering if you guys study halibut concentrations and movement.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Halibut are super fun species to catch. Everybody loves to go out and get them. We're not doing any halibut specific studies right now. The CCFRP program that I mentioned, we do catch a handful of halibut, and we measure and tag and release those. Halibut are a pretty data limited species, but the stock assessment that you mentioned, it was done kind of in a spatially explicit way. So they assess the stock in Central California and in Southern California. And if my memory is correct, the Central California stock showed pretty stable trends, but the Southern California stock was down quite a bit. And so right now we're trying to figure out, what are the biggest data gaps and what are the most important data gaps that we need to fill in order to, you know, understand what to do about it.
What's interesting about that, though, is we had the 5 years of, quote-unquote, El Nino warmer water here, okay?
Yep.
And so in those 5 years, there was a huge increase.
That will help, probably.
In San Francisco Bay,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of like a... it's a northern kind of range for them, but with the warmer water, they all pushed up, and their sport boats had limits for like 20 people.
I read about that.
Yeah.
You know, you hear about
five fish limits for. I mean, they were getting 80 to 100 fish at times.
Yeah, you hear about the impacts of these crazy oceanographic changes that we have, and when we have marine heat waves, like back in 2014 and 15, we had wahoo and blue marlin off the coast from down south, but that means at the same time some of our species move farther north too. Market squid moved farther north. White sea bass were being caught off Santa Cruz quite a bit, and halibut, like you mentioned, were up in San Francisco Bay. So a lot of changes happened during those periods, and that's something you want to be able to monitor and know about
and understand.
So you're not artificially saying that the stock is down here when actually it's just somewhere else.
Yeah, where it might be healthier than it's ever been, but it just isn't
moved.
In San Diego Bay or in Santa Monica Bay.
Yeah, in the case of halibut, that decline has been going on for a very long time. It wasn't just during that window. But I think that warm water pulse will create a recruitment, a coincident recruitment pulse that will probably help the fishery. So that's good.
Great news. Hey, thanks a lot for the call this morning. Interesting question I always want to kind of wonder about from Ian. And he says, where are cookie cutter sharks prevalent? And do they stay on the host and continuously feed, or they just take a bite?
It's just a single bite. They come up from the depths.
Cookie cutter sharks.
Cookie cutter sharks.
You ever seen a bite from a cookie cutter shark?
They're brutal.
It looks like a cookie. Like a cookie cutter.
It's crazy.
Yeah, they come up out of the depths and they feed.
Sounds like a horror film.
I know.
They're
like little miniature horror films. Yeah. They don't get very big. They're tiny little sharks, but they swim up out of the depths and they grab a chunk out of a tuna or a marlin.
So while you're fighting a tuna, they'll bite them, and all of a sudden you pull up the tuna. And you see this,
it'll look like you took an ice cream scoop and just dug a chunk out of the fish. That's what it looks like.
So they live here.
They live all over. I don't really know I don't think anybody knows what their true distribution is, but they're really unique.
Yeah. Have I heard correctly, though, that, fortunately for me, I'm a diver and never had it happen, that divers actually get it sometimes?
What? I think that has happened once or twice.
Yeah.
Like, talk about nightmare sea.
We're really talking about
It's like, what the heck?
It's got me thinking now.
Yeah. For sure. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in the phone.
Oh, let's do it. On that note, Pete, Benjamin, calling from Carlsbad. Thanks for joining us this morning. Let's talk hookup, Benjamin.
How are you guys doing, man? Good morning. I was going to ask Lyle and Elaine if they know why Canada people say A after everything.
Oh,
that's a question for Elaine.
Elena.
Well.
It's because of the way it's spelled. It's C-A-N-A-D-A. Anyway, that's my joke for the day.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's a bit early for that kind of humor, but
sorry that we're missing all these people lately. I just say emulate what you love in somebody and just keep your heart knowing that you can be a better person because of them, and they'll never be out of your heart. My question, Elaine and Lyle, is calicos grow really slow. I've always been a catch-and-release guy with calicos. I've been lucky to catch hundreds of them, some off of San Clemente Island and big old 10-pounders with my friend Ty Ponder. Anyway, why do they grow slow, and what do we do about these MLPA zones maybe reopening one day?
All really good questions.
Yeah, both great questions. Why do species grow faster and slower than others? It's a tough question. It's just their genetics, you know. It's environment, it's food availability, it's the species, the nuances of the species and the genetics that go into it. So it's a combination of factors. But you're right, they do grow relatively slowly. So releasing them as much as we can, especially for species that are so highly sought after and caught so much, is really important because, you know, when we tagged fish and they were released, we've had tagged fish get recaptured multiple times. We've had reports from fish recaptured 3, 4, 5 times.
Calicos?
Yeah. So
cool.
So when you're releasing fish and you're telling your kid, you know, hey, we're releasing this so someone else can catch it another day, that's really true.
People it's legitimate.
People actually do catch them another day.
Yeah. It's different for, describe the difference between like a resident fish like a calico bass versus a pelagic fish like a yellowtail or a tuna, right?
Yeah, the nearshore species tend to grow a lot slower. They have more limited home ranges. They don't move as far. They're associated with structure, whereas the pelagic fish grow faster. have much wider range of movement. Yeah, so completely different life histories.
Yeah. And calico bass here, the older the bass is it better for the stock to have that older fish?
Yeah, most species in general, not just for calicos, but across species, the largest fish have exponentially more eggs when they spawn, and those eggs are better quality, meaning the young are better quality and they have higher survival rate.
Better genetics.
Yeah.
And it's probably good with the diversity too, with the older and the younger.
Yep.
I mean, together, right?
Yep. Combined. Yep. Yeah, absolutely,
right.
Absolutely.
Great.
And I should just give one shout out to Chris Carpo, captain of the Sea Watch.
Yes.
Back when we were doing our tagging trips, and Paul Fisher, captain of the Outer Limits, we had a couple of epic days, and they always like me to remind them. We had a couple thousand fish days when we were tagging calico.
Wow.
So shout out to those guys for putting us on the fish back then.
And yeah. So Chris, on the Sea Watch, Captain Chris, you guys had a record number.
It was like 1,100 fish, I think.
That's in one day?
Yeah, in one day.
Wow, that you tagged and released?
And we quit early.
Almost a half day.
It was almost a half day. No one anticipates tagging that many fish.
Did you tag that many fish?
We ran out of tags on that day and went home a couple hours early.
Well, speaking of Sea Watch and the Outer Limits, let's head down to Seaforth Sport Fishing and talk to our buddy Marcos. Good morning, Marcos.
Good morning, Marcos.
Good morning, guys. I hear all 1,100 of those bass were caught on MC swim baits, too.
Right.
Every single one of them.
Every single one.
Hey, I've got you trained just like the California sea lions.
There you go. Exactly. Every single one until they ran out of swim baits and tags.
Good morning, Marcos.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
Oh, very good.
Very, very similar week to what we've had last few weeks here, which is pretty good winter fishing. A few days in the middle there where the weather kind of prevented us from getting out on the water. But the Sea Watch, again, back out there on those half days, seeing a little bit of bass in there, calico bass, sand bass, some sculpin. Actually caught a halibut and released a couple halibut on yesterday, excuse me. So definitely sneaking into that springtime fishing. And, again, on Tuesday coming up here, the bottom fishing opens back up in California, so we're going back to a more traditional schedule there. The new Seaforth will be running those local half-day trips in morning and afternoon. So definitely check the website there for that. If you do want to get on one of those extended half-days before they stop running those for the season, tomorrow is your last chance to do that. Get on the half-day, go fish Mexico for some deep-water rockcod fishing. Otherwise, back to that local fishing. Hopefully, we see some good local rockfish, see some more bass mixed in there, the whole shebang that we start to expect around this time of March. The Tribute on their day and a half last weekend had very good bottom fishing. Again, what you expect for that wintertime coastal trips going down there. They had 45 lingcod, 141 reds, 30 rockfish, and 94 whitefish for their 31 anglers on that day and a half. And they are back out there today, so hopefully we get some more of that. And they're scheduled also at least through March there. So definitely check the website, seaforthlanding.com. Have our full schedule up there. Said if you want to go on the extended half day, tomorrow's your last chance. Otherwise, we're back to those normal half days. Got the Tribute running on the weekends, and probably within a few weeks here, we're going to start seeing the San Diego again, you know, so we might see them schedule trips pretty soon here, so definitely keep an eye on that. And it's, you know, like I said, the season never really ended, and we took a little lull, but it's starting back up, so if you put your gear away, definitely get it back up, back out, get it set up, and get ready to do some fishing.
And what a perfect week for a great weather week to have the rockfish season open, right? Tuesday is supposed to be like 75, 80 degrees.
Wednesday is good, too.
Wednesday's
Thursday.
Beautiful, yeah. So,
even though it's worse, it's into like mid-60s, so very nice weather out there.
Yeah, we're ready for it. All right, Marcos, great stuff. Appreciate the report, and we'll talk to you with that good report next Saturday.
We'll talk to you then, guys.
Yeah, good stuff, Marcos. Hey, and that's sponsored by a guy you can find right now down at Fisherman's Landing.
Sean's there.
I saw him setting up a tent. They had a cold case. I don't know what.
Sweet.
He's
selling spices and rubs and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So not only do they offer the best processing for your fish when your trip returns to the San Diego Landings, as well as your private boat catch, now with Fish Pros of Market, you can purchase fresh fish, smoked, jerkied, spices, rubs, smoked cheese, and their famous tuna burgers, along with the amazing poke kit, which I told you I put on as a fish rub.
Fantastic.
Let me tell you. It's got the right I used the word tang. It's got the right spice on that fish rub. But you can get all of that at their Old Town location, or stop by today and see them at
Fisherman's Landing Tackle Sale.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it reminds me, I'm going to go get some more pokey sauce because Holly says I'm out of pokey sauce, and she uses it for like a stir fry. It's a great mix for a stir fry.
Oh man,
yeah. And then the pokey mix, you can throw a little of that in there.
I'm telling you, they do a really good job.
The new ceviche spice.
They make them all themselves, and the smoking and all that stuff put into the spice. It's as good as it gets.
Good stuff, for sure. All right. Well, phones are packed. Let's jump into it. They want to talk to Lyle and Elena.
How about Janice? Janice calling from San Clemente. Good morning, Janice.
Good morning, everyone. The questions have just been fantastic because all my questions so far have been answered. But I've gone out on a couple of the tagging trips to just absolutely love it and have a ball. Are you going to do – I know you already answered that you only have them, I guess, up in the – Santa Barbara and La Jolla, but are there plans to have them in between there, Oceanside, Dana Point, that area? And then my second question is, I don't know if you can answer it, but the hatchery programs are just focused on white sea bass and halibut. Are they thinking about expanding different species for the hatchery program?
Great questions. Yeah. The CCFRP, The two main hubs in Southern California are San Diego and Santa Barbara, but out of San Diego, we run trips out of both Seaforth and Oceanside. I think the Oceanside trips are mostly on the SeaStar with Joe Cacciola, and he runs trips up and down the coast out of there. So if you're interested in going out on trips kind of in that more in-between zone, Oceanside would be your best bet. And, you know, our sampling coverage is totally funding dependent, so we're trying to get more funding right now to increase our sampling coverage and maybe get some Orange County or L.A. Trips in, but that's kind of down the road. But hopefully you can get out on one of those Oceanside trips. And then for the hatchery question, yeah, their focus is on white sea bass and halibut. I'm not aware of any other efforts or funding to expand to other species.
Cool. All right. Hey, and thanks for supporting those programs, too, because they need people like you to go out, especially the lady anglers, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Elena, yeah. Smiling, yeah.
There's been tons of women anglers on this trip.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Good for you, and thanks a lot for the call this morning. That does free up a line at 213-432-1090. Corey, you have a good text, huh?
I do, and the whole reason I want to bring this up, it's educational, right? But with the rockfish season opener and the whole thing coming up, this is a great one. And this is Scott from San Diego texts in, do rockfish survive if you poke the air bladder to send them back down? And this is such
a good question.
A really good one.
It's a great question.
Because
people have been doing it for
number
years.
Number one, what you see sticking out of their mouth isn't their air bladder.
Yeah.
What
exactly
is that?
Yeah. So they're... When a fish gets brought up to the surface, they experience what's called barotrauma, which is pressure-related trauma. They have a whole number of symptoms. Their eyes pop out of their head. That's called exophthalmia. They have embolisms in their eyes. They have embolisms in their gill membranes. Their swim bladder and their stomach are averted, so that's their averted esophagus.
That's not
that you see.
Necessarily the bladder sticking out. That's their stomach.
Yeah, exactly. So that gets averted and sticks out. They have all sorts of physiological impacts that you don't even see with the naked eye, you know. So they go through a lot. So it's remarkable when you think about that, that if you descend them, they can actually survive.
Recover.
All of that... equalizes, all of that pressure trauma equalizes, and they can actually survive.
But what I've seen people do, and what Scott might be referring to, is like sometimes they take a fillet knife and poke that air out, and
exactly.
think about what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not only Scott from San Diego, but...
A lot of people do it.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
And so what you're doing...
That fish is not going to survive? You're damaging the swim bladder. I don't know if there have been, I don't think there have been any studies that looked at post-release survival directly of punctured swim bladders. I'm not even, I don't even know if you could get a permit to do that.
You're assuming that they're getting the swim bladder. A lot of people are mistaking the stomach for the swim bladder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So I would recommend against it. Now that descending devices are as advanced as they are and as easy to use as they are, I would just recommend using that because that's demonstrated successful.
Which descending device do you like?
We've tested a bunch. We tested the Sequalizer, the Rock Release, the Shelton Fish Descender. All of them work. Yeah. Every single one of them work. There's no wrong answer. People have a general preference for the Sequalizer because you can set it to three different depths, 50, 100, or 150 feet. Or you can get a different model that sets to even deeper, 200 or 300 feet. And it just depends on the depth that you plan on fishing. So the Sequalizer tends to be the preferred, but all of them work.
Yeah, I use the Rock Lease, and it's easy, and it works. You're catching a fish at 350 feet.
Mm-hmm.
How deep do you want to descend that fish?
Ideally, 350 feet. Ideally,
oh, really?
All the way back.
All the way
back.
Really?
Yeah, to maximize survival, you need to get them at least halfway down.
At least halfway.
But ideally, get them all the way to the bottom.
And then there's a time issue. As quickly as possible, that's really important, too.
Yes. You don't want to throw them on the deck for a while and let them sit there. And
time on surface.
Get them in the water, back in the water as soon as possible.
Yep. Yeah, all people used to think that if you wound up the fish slowly that that would help. Just get them up as fast and back down as fast, as quickly as possible.
All right.
That's a good one for sure.
Let's go ahead and jump back in there.
We need to. There is one open line, 213-432-1090. We'll talk to Daniel. Daniel from Rancho Cucamonga. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Daniel.
I have a question. How you doing? When it comes to yellowtail, what would be the smallest size that you should throw back to give them a chance to grow and reproduce again?
That's a good question. So, you know, yellowtail are one of those species. The bag and size limit right now, it's a weird one, right?
It's like 5 under, 24, I think, and 5 over.
Is it? Okay.
You're only allowed 5 under, I believe.
Yeah.
Don't take my word for it, right? I mean, I always check the regs and regulations. But it's fork length, 24 inch.
And a couple of them have to be over a certain amount. But,
you're only allowed 5 under the 24-inch limit, but you're allowed 10 fish, so you can keep 10 fish that are over the 24-inch.
That's right.
Okay.
I always forget that one because it's so mixed up. So you are allowed to keep some fish that are relatively small. And so, you know, when we go out on kelp patties and we see a lot of those smaller sort of rat yellows, I would recommend releasing those because those kelp patties will drift to shore, and those fish will get bigger, and then you'll have a lot more of those bruiser coastal fish that everybody...
Because they grow fast, right?
They grow very, very fast.
How fast does a yellowtail grow?
Oh, a lot faster than a calico, probably about the same growth rates as white sea bass or a barracuda, so they're maturing about 3 to 4 years old.
Okay.
And that's really quick.
Maturing 3 to 4 years old. So you think about that. A legal white sea bass at 28 inches is about a four-year-old fish.
Exactly. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Versus a calico doesn't mature till 7 years? Is that what
no.
It is?
About,
12 inches.
About the same age, but much smaller. So they're only, you know, a four-year-old calico that just matured is like 10 inches.
Ten inches.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
They just came into the spawn.
Yeah. But as far as yellows go, that minimum size limit's a little confusing. So make sure you know the regs. And I would recommend releasing those smaller fish. That way those coastal fish will have more of those bigger coastal fish in the future.
Man, so much good information.
Yeah,
I
really
love
good.
It. All right, we're going to be right back. You're listening to Southern California Sport Fishing Voice. It's Let's Talk Hookup on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Low gas prices are great. Free ice is amazing. But what sets Summit Gasoline apart from the rest goes much deeper. When you pull up to the pumps, you will first notice how clean everything is, the great sound system, and, of course, the low gas and diesel prices. Walk into Summit Gasoline Bistro, and you will meet Martha, the store manager, that heads up the well-trained and busy staff. Check out the selection of frozen bait and chum, the top-of-the-line Italian coffee, and so much more. Get your discounted Everingham live bait certificates, your free 100 pounds of ice, with a 35
5-gallon minimum purchase. Stock up on snacks, beer, water, and soda for your trip. The amazing staff at Summit Gasoline are always happy to help you out. Sometimes little things make a difference, like free high-tech air for your tires, or the 2 acres at the San Diego Sports Arena that make it easy to pull your boat and trailer in and out. Summit Gasoline at the Sports Arena. Try them once and you'll be back. Low prices, friendly staff, and easy in and out with your boat and trailer at the San Diego Sports Arena.
One of the dream trips for most anglers is Alaska. There are so many lodges. How do you make a choice? It's easy. Choose the one most Let's Talk Hookup listeners return to time after time. Kingfisher Charters in Sitka, Alaska. No one does it better than Kingfisher Charters. They offer the best service, the most comfortable accommodations, fantastic food, and the finest charter captains in Sitka. All for the ultimate value. One visit and you will understand why nobody beats Kingfisher Charters. Sitka is famous for some of the best runs of salmon in Alaska. And if giant Alaskan halibut is your target, the expert captains at Kingfisher Charters know the hot spots and can put you on a fish of a lifetime. Plenty of rockfish and huge ling cod are there too. And when it comes to fish processing, the best in Alaska is Kingfisher Charters. It's all included in your package. In fact, everything is included except tips. It is truly amazing how the Kingfisher crew continues the quality of service they deliver year after year. Kingfisher Charters, 800-727-6136 or check kingfishercharters.com.
All of us at the American Angler family want to express appreciation to our regular passengers that fish with us year after year and to the new anglers that came out this last season. We realize how precious your vacation time is, and we are truly grateful that you have chosen to spend this time with us. It's important that your experience is memorable, from the moment you call the office to the time you step off the boat. Hi, I'm Lori. Call me at the office, 619-223-5414, or check us out at AmericanAnglerSportFishing.com. Come fishing with the American Angler family and make a memory.
Great fishing is what Seaforth Sports Fishing in Mission Bay is all about. With free parking and fully stocked tackle shop, Seaforth Sport Fishing is a favorite among anglers. Come aboard top boats like the Aztec, Cortez, Endeavor, Apollo, Outer Limits, Elgato Doe, Pride, Polaris Supreme, Tribute, Pacifica, Pacific Voyager, and the Voyager. Plus, the new Seaforth Sea Watch in San Diego offer the finest half and full day trips available. Seaforth Sport Fishing. For charters or schedule, check seaforthlanding.com. Run by fishermen for fishermen in Mission Bay.
I can't wait to spend some quality time with my son fishing this year, teaching him about casting, how to choose bait, set the hook, and how to be safe on the water by always wearing a life jacket. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
All right, welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Let's Talk Hookup app. Oh. Having so much fun.
Oh, man, so many great calls and texts, and we're doing our best to get to as many as we can, but we're going to talk hooks and bags right now with Ted from Gamakatsu. Good morning, Ted.
Pete, good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
Hey, doing terrific, of course. Thanks to your generosity, we're giving away that G-Bag 5000. Why don't you tell us about that bag first?
Well, we put a lot of thought and effort into this. You know, the team, our team, you know, we work together on a lot of product development projects, and this is one we tried to set out and create a bag that kind of answered a lot of the questions that most of us have had, you know, using bags over the years. We wanted to make it very easy to get into and out of and get tackled into. We didn't want to have to fight the bag, zippers and buckles and things of that nature. I mean, you need a couple of those things, but so we set out, that was the goal of the project, is to create a bag that's just really user-friendly. So we developed what's called our extra wide mouth opening. There's an internal frame that goes in the inside of the bag. It opens up almost like the old school doctor bags, or those of you that have bought power tools lately, there's a lot of those little bags that drills and things are coming in that open up really nicely. And with that internal frame, it'll stay open. And so you can get the trays and your tackle and the things that you're reaching for in the bag very easily. And then it just compacts back down and zips. So we use, you know, premium zippers, premium closures. You know, this is, we wanted to make sure we had a bag that we could put the Gamakatsu name on that people could use for years.
And it's water resistant, right?
It is. You know, we wanted to stay tuned on that front. There might be something coming here in the future in that regard, but it's just a polyester bag, you know, so but it does hold up well against the elements. It's got a molded EVA bottom, so it's slip resistant and water resistant. The other cool feature that we did with it is on the front flap, like where you put your tools, your sunglasses, things of that nature, we put some heavy-duty magnets in the flap. And what we felt with that was, is that way if you're reaching in with a fish in one hand or your rod in one hand, and you're trying to get into your bag to grab something, you can flip that open very easily. Then the magnetic flap will hold open, and you can get inside, do your thing, and then just simply just reach down and just flip it down, and the magnets are very strong. They'll just adhere and close that pocket up for you.
Nice. Oh, sounds like a great bag, and some one of our texters or callers is going to win that bag. Now, let's talk about the big sale at Fisherman's Landing Tackle today and what's going on with Gamakatsu there.
Yeah, so Fisherman's Landing today, they're doing a buy two, get one free. I think it's through the weekend. I'm not sure if it's just today.
It's Saturday and Sunday. It's Saturday and Sunday.
It is both days. I wasn't clear on that. I knew they were doing it at least, so it's both days doing the buy two, get one free. So teamed up with those guys to be able to create some excitement on people getting ready for the season.
Yeah, and of course, you came out with the number two and number four and the smaller size Nautilus circle hooks, which have like caught so many fish at the end of the season last year. It was crazy. So I know they're stocked up on those, and those are the ones you definitely want to stock up on, those Nautilus circle hooks, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that was one of the big feedback we got from down there, was the smaller hooks that were needed. And unfortunately, they delivered a little late last year. Like a lot of things in the supply chain today, things are taking a little more time. But we finally got them, so make sure you get some and get yourself stocked up on those in time for the season, because they, for such a small hook, boy, they sure are very effective.
Oh, yeah. Now, Sea Falcon is also on sale. I think it's buy two, get one free on Sea Falcon lures, right?
That's correct. So what they're, and that's the other thing is they're doing, so Sea Falcon has been, we're starting to catch, we've only, this is our second year of being the exclusive distributor for Sea Falcon. And again, shipments were a little late last year, so we're starting to get some more inventory in. We expect another big shipment to come in, and we're getting flush with inventory. So definitely get out and get your Sea Falcon while you can. It's a little bit slow in getting them to come from Japan, but we've got a new design that I'm excited about that I think most listeners will be very excited about. So we're I can't quite reveal that one yet. We're still in the field test aspect of that. I know you've got a few of the super secret baits.
Oh, and I can tell you, I've got fish on them, too. They're awesome.
Yes, yes. So we're excited about that. Got the colorways all figured out, the size range. Now it's just a matter of having our manufacturer make them for us. So we're anxious to get those going. Be looking for those in stores soon.
All right, fantastic. Well, Ted, we sure appreciate all the support you give a Let's Talk Hookup. And, of course, Gamakatsu sponsors virtually all of our Let's Talk Hookup trips on the sport boats, which we were very thankful for putting a lot of Gamakatsu hooks on those trips with us. And of course, that new bag, too, the G-Bag. Now, when are we going to see that in store at the G-Bag 5000?
It's available now. So it's available both on Gamakatsu.com and our retailers throughout the California region. So wherever your listeners are listening to, they are available. And so we just got the inventory in on those just here recently.
All right. Fantastic. Ted from Gamakatsu, sure appreciate your time, and thanks for all the support. We appreciate it.
You guys have a great day.
All right. You too.
Man, that sale of Fisherman's, man. I can't imagine all the Gamakatsu hooks.
There's a lot of them going on.
Oh, my gosh.
They're going out there. Take advantage of it.
JRI jigs.
Yeah, all that stuff.
I think Rick's too busy to call in.
I think he is.
I think he is, man.
Well, let's go back in the phones.
Let's do it. How about Ed? Ed in Mira Mesa. Good morning, Ed. Welcome to the show this morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Last year I went down to Mexico and was fishing off Ensenada, and I caught a Calcod that was it weighed out a little over 25 pounds.
Man, that's a big one.
And what I was wondering, how can you tell the age of that fish like that? Is it like the black sea bass?
Great question. Just by looking at the fish, you can't really tell the age. You have to properly age a fish, you have to dissect it, open it up, and remove the otoliths from the posterior portion of the head. And then you section the otolith, and then, like Corey was mentioning, you look at it under a microscope, and you count the rings on it like you would on the rings of a tree.
Wow.
So
how old would a fish like that be? Any idea?
Oh, gosh. Calcod mature at about 17 years old, to the best of our knowledge.
And wow.
I think they probably get about 80. So and a 25-pound fish is big. It's they get a little bit bigger, but I would say it's probably at least 50.
Wow, 50 years old.
Yeah. That's what makes them so susceptible to...
Sure. Yep. Like black sea bass, right?
Same
kind of thing. Very slow to grow and age. Like a big black sea bass is 80 years old, like that.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But the black sea bass is a huge recovery story, really,
huge
for California, right?
Yep. I mean...
Yep. And so is Calcutta.
That's true.
Yeah.
They're talking about opening a season on Calcutta, even.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about that. As scientists... Your thoughts on opening back up a season on Calcod or black sea bass?
Tricky, because these are species that are so susceptible to even the slightest bit of overfishing.
Yeah.
We already know what got us here in the first place, and ratcheting, you know, the regulations back to where we were before could be tricky. So I would say we would have to do it really thoughtfully and in a really data-driven way.
Yeah.
You know, that's so interesting, because the cow cod and the black sea bass, like an elk hunt,
or like a tag. Like a tag.
You pay
a good amount of money for a tag.
That's what I'm saying.
Back into the research.
Yep. Maybe you only sell five tags, but it generates a ton of funding.
You know what? How many people right now would line up with a $1,000 bill for a black sea bass tag, where there's maybe only a dozen of them offered, right? But all that revenue is right back to the state and research. And
it's a really good discussion that it's been brought up before. I don't know how far it ever got, but
you guys need to come to the council and start speaking.
Propose it at the council meeting.
There you go. All right. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate that. And congratulations on a nice cow cod there. Hopefully he got him back down and he's still swimming around.
Yeah.
Hey, and great text from Phil in Costa Mesa. Please ask your host to comment on Corvina and Bonefish in the San Diego Bay. Is this a temporary thing in their minds, or is this a permanent resident?
Oh, no, it's a permanent resident. Bonefish have been around for a long, long time.
Where did they come from?
We had a big recruitment pulse in 97 during that El Nino, and maybe they were here before 97. There were a handful.
I can promise you they were here in the 80s.
Okay, there you go.
Bonefish and the Corvina, they had been here for... There were also Jack Revell in the back.
Yes, there were. I remember a buddy of mine, one of my oldest fishing buddies, Todd Keller.
He
was a deckhand. He passed away a long time ago, but I used to fish with him when we were kids, and he had a Jack Revell mounted on his wall that he caught by the power plant down there, and a bonefish, and that was in 94. So they were there pre El Nino for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So there's theories, of course, that they came in the bilge water of ships coming from tropical climates. Is there any truth to that at all, or could that survive in that bilge water?
I know that happens with other species. It's certainly possible.
Elena, you say it could happen.
Yeah, I think it's more with smaller,
invertebrates and things
like
that.
Little crustaceans and things like that. But I don't know about fish. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I do know in 97 we had a big recruitment pulse, and ever since then the population has just gone gangbusters. And now we actually have a really healthy population of bonefish in San Diego.
There is.
I've seen them in Mission Bay. I've seen them in Newport Bay.
But think about what you're saying. They're in the bays. So that's actually the warmest water that can be found when this time of the year, right?
Yep.
So they barely make that survival temperature and being in the back of the bay. There's a population of green sea turtles that live permanently in the back of San Diego Bay. I mean, there's a lot of neat...
Yep.
Things in the ecosystem of this natural bay here.
There really are. And the Corvina, too. You know, people shore fish all around the bay now and target them, and they're here to stay.
It's a neat fishery.
Yeah.
It is.
There was a theory or a thought that when they turned off the power plant back down there and the warm water went away, that these fish would disappear, and that hasn't happened,
has it?
And the green turtles haven't disappeared either.
No, they haven't.
Yeah. Correct.
So they're permanent residents.
Yeah, they are.
Go catch them.
And that power plant shut down, I want to say, like 15 years, like 12, over 12 years ago.
Yeah. Been a while.
So it has.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah. Because the water gets pretty cold back there.
It does. It gets chilly, but it's, you know, warm enough in the shallows that they survive.
That they're okay.
Yeah, it's kind of neat.
All right. Well, let's jump back on the phones.
How about Lance? Lance Cone from Vista. Good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup, Lance.
Hey, guys. Thanks for always putting together a good show, and thanks for the biologists for sharing their knowledge. We all appreciate it. One of my questions actually just got answered when you mentioned to do your study on aging fish and learning about fish. You dissect them and you take that little marble out of their back of their head, I guess. And then I had another question that I'll get to after that. But we were out at the 43 a couple years ago, looking for tuna, and we saw a bunch of birds working. And so we rushed up there only to find the surface of the water just covered with gorgeous big reds and salmon groupers, and then we noticed a research vessel was, you know, obviously harvesting these fish and doing their thing. And so my question there is, you know, it just seemed like a waste. You know, we were so tempted to get our net out and just scoop up all these beautiful red rock cod that were floating around. Like, you know, I don't want to exaggerate, but it seemed like more than 100 of them, right? You know, just covered, and all the birds were working there. So I didn't know if maybe a regulation, if that's something that as us fishermen can harvest those fish and then somehow, you know, prove that they were, you know, used in research and you were just trying to like recover the resource after that or not. That's my first question. The second question is, as we're looking at different types of hooks, you know, with it being hard to set hooks, you know, on rock cod deep, you know, is circle hooks a good option versus J hooks? So those are the two questions I had.
Oh, good. Very good question.
Circle hooks work great when I'm fishing a dropper loop. Like, you know, you don't have to swing. You just hold them. You can feel them on there and then you just start winding.
And so, they stay on.
And they stay on. So I'm a big fan of circle hooks on dropper loops for rockfish.
Easier for release too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I learned how to fish like that.
That's right.
So if you can learn it up. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No swinging.
As far as the fish floating out there on the 43.
That could have been a commercial fishing operation of some kind, too, where they weren't allowed to keep them.
Yeah,
you know,
that could have been anything. Yeah, it could have been someone fishing out there illegally. The the research trips that go out there and sample those places, they charter commercial boats to do it. So, is it a research trip? Is it a commercial trip? Or is it some sort of illegal trip? I have no idea. I haven't heard of that. But can you collect those fish that are then floating, that floated up from a spot where you're not allowed to fish?
Right.
Great question. Hey, I have no idea.
You'd have to ask the local officer.
Yeah,
I do know it's stated in the California Department of Fish and Wildlife that it is illegal to waste any game or fish.
Yes.
So
I don't know. I think you could fight it in court if they give you a ticket.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's possible. Not recommending anything.
I don't want to waste it.
Not making recommend, but we certainly know, especially like a red rock cod.
I've never heard about anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, thanks for the call this morning. Randy from Vista was hearing to talk about kelp patty yellows and the rat yellows that we sometimes catch on that, and he wants to know, is that how local populations form? If not, is it not a local spawn? So is that, so you're talking about the kelp patties drifting in. Is that how we get these resident populations at the local kelp beds?
That's one of the big ways. So I don't know if you guys have ever done much diving on kelp patties, but throughout the court, it's really cool, actually. If you go diving on the patties earlier in the season, you'll see little yellowtail recruits, like 1 inch long, swarming around the patties.
Yeah.
And if you keep diving out at the patties throughout the course of the summer, you'll start to see those 1-inchers become 2, 3, 5. By the end
quickly.
Of the, yeah, quickly. By October, if you go dive on a patty, now these are 3, 4 pound fish.
Really?
That are circling around the patties, and those will eventually migrate away from the patties and find coastal areas. So they're actually, patties are a delivery mechanism for yellowtail to coastal areas. And that's something, you know, people don't necessarily think about all the time.
You mentioned kelp patties, and this is something I learned only about 10 years ago, is that I never knew this, that small rockfish at less than an inch long will actually, they're up at the surface and become part of the ecosystem on a kelp patty.
Yeah, absolutely true. You'll find tree fish, especially tree fish, and for whatever reason, split-nose rockfish, which are a deeper species that we don't really catch on the sport boats too much. But those two species in particular, but you will find others as well. Yeah, a lot of species recruit to those kelp patties.
Think about that, right?
It's crazy.
You're talking about...
It's a whole ecosystem.
It really is,
right? The kelp patty.
Yeah.
Like kelp health is important, too.
Yeah. It is.
So, I'm all for releasing those small yellows if you can.
I try to.
Yeah. Hey, take one or two home.
Mm-hmm.
They're delicious, but, you know... Try and let them grow up, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a good message.
Yeah.
So are they spawning on those kelp beds? Or are they just spawning in open water?
I don't think anybody knows. I don't know, to be honest. They're probably spawning all over.
And then these juveniles find the kelp patties for protection.
Yeah, I think the larvae drift around in the currents for a certain period of time.
Uh-huh.
Most species have what's called a pelagic larval duration.
Mm-hmm.
Like the basses have a larval duration of about 30 days. And when those larvae find some kind of structure, they'll associate with the structure and then grow up. So when larvae bump into a kelp patty,
That becomes
their structure, and that's where they grow up.
Wow.
Well, before we run out of time, let's go to Brian in British Columbia.
Hey.
Is that somebody you know, Elena? Good morning, Brian.
I think that's my dad.
Oh,
Hello there, kids. I just wanted to say hello. I just wanted to make a commentary. I think it's incredible that we're having an involvement of both scientists and the people in the recreational committee and the boats and that working together to do that. Up in Canada, we're having some issues. The biggest issue up in Canada, and I guess a lod of us would know about this, is the East Coast cod fishery, which for 500 years was one of the main cod fisheries for Europe and North America, and back in the 70s and 80s through political just bad advice decimated that fishery. The problem now is that up in BC, we're now running into issues with salmon. This year's salmon, it was supposed to be what we call a pink run. A pink salmon run is a run where you can't keep fish off the hook. Wasn't a single fish. I went out multiple times, wasn't a single fish. Most of the salmon, and Lyle probably knows a lot more than I do, most of the salmon fishery up here are substantially reduced, catch limits, closures, everything. And we have another issue. There are four major herring fishery groups. Three of those herring fishery groups are basically closed to commercial fishery. That's a real issue because the herring are also feedstocks for a lot of the salmon and the orcas, too. So for all of you people, all of us in North America on the West Coast, and particularly in California, I really encourage the continued working together with the scientists and the recreation committee, because together we can fight this and we can maintain a good, healthy set of stocks. Anyhow, all
love
the best
you,
to you tonight.
That's a really good message, Brian.
It is a really good message, and it kind of relates to why we're only allowed four reds and stuff.
And it also explains why Elena's such a great fisheries biologist, too, because God taught her the right way to look at fisheries, and without people like you, our future is dim, but with people like you, our future for fisheries is bright.
And absolutely.
I'm excited about that.
It's awesome. Hey, we're going to be right back on Let's Talk. I got more from Lyle and Elena. We're going to find out who's won this G-Box from Gamakatsu when we return on Let's Talk About the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
The name that stands out among anglers is Fisherman's Landing, your top choice in local and long-range fishing. Hi, this is Doug Kern. Our hard-working crew will make sure your fishing experience is one to remember. We offer the finest open party trips from 1 to 3 days, the best charter boats available, and of course, our world-renowned long-range fleet is second to none. Fisherman's Landing is a full-service operation offering great half-day trips on the Dolphin and full-day open party trips on the spacious and comfortable Liberty. Since we introduced the full-day trips at Fisherman's Landing, the 85-foot Liberty has become a favorite among full-day operations with bunks for your comfort, huge bait capacity, and RSW fish holds to keep your catch fresh. Plus, Liberty has a big modern galley and two interior heads with showers. All our open party trips from half-day, full, or 1 to 3 day trips can easily be booked online at fishermanslanding.com or give us a call at 619-221-8500. I'll see you at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego.
When it comes to fishing rods for saltwater, there's just one name you need to know, Calstar. Take, for example, the Graphiter series. It's a true graphite and fiberglass composite rod, the finest that's ever been built. And for anglers seeking traditional performance, durability, and quality at an affordable price, the Calstar West Coast series of rods and blanks are the ones for you. Their master craftsmen bring decades of rod building experience to every rod they make. So if you want your fishing rods to be truly state-of-the-art, I always recommend Calstar at fine tackle stores everywhere.
This is Captain Dwayne Diego, Pinnacle Sport Fishing. Visual signs are one of our most important aspects to our charter fishing business. It's the reason myself and all of our crew all wear Costa sunglasses. With advanced polarization technology, Costa is designed to help cut through the sun's glare while providing enhanced color and comfort to help you see more fish. Costa was founded over 35 years ago by a group of fishermen wanting high-performance lenses for every fishing application. Costa has a West Coast-style frame and lens for your pursuit. Check them out at CostaSunglasses.com.
There are plenty of boat slips and marinas in San Diego, but there's only one Kona Kai. It's not just a place to park your boat. It's a way of life here in America's finest city. The Kona Kai Resort Spa and Marina has multiple swimming pools and a private beach, waterfront restaurants, and award-winning spa, most of which is included for marina tenants. Check ResortKonaKai.com for more information. The Kona Kai Resort, much more than just a place to park your boat.
Awesome!
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. And Pete, truly the fastest 2 hours on radio.
Unbelievable. I mean, we got to have these guys back soon, for sure. We're getting flooded with calls and texts. And thank you for everybody that got through.
We're running out of time. We did the coin flip, Elena did. And the lucky winner was a caller. Caller Benjamin from Carlsbad wins the Gamakatsu G bag from Gamakatsu.
Gamakatsu, you're going to love that bag. I can't wait to get one for sure. I ordered one up, and I can't wait to try it for sure. Hey, Elena, it's always great to see you and Lyle. And Elena, working your hard work with SAC has just been fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you
so much for
so
having
cool
us.
To hear from your dad, too. That was,
I
he has some great words. Now we know why you're
such a smarty pants. Proud.
Yeah. And Lyle, your great work with Calico and all your stuff with the Nature Conservancy, just fantastic.
Thank you so
Keep
much.
Keep up the great work.
I love coming here and chatting with you
guys. Yeah. And I hope people understand that the Nature Conservancy is really, it's a great group of people that are fishing people.
We work with fishing communities from the ground up.
Yeah. Yep. So that's important to know that when you see Nature Conservancy, that group is on the good side, for sure. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for your efforts. And keep up the great work. And will you come back?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Bring some more jam for us?
Of course.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, we got some special BC jam from Wild
Homemade Canadian style.
Yeah, for sure.
I had to import it,
Well, hey, thanks to Christian for all his hard work on the phones and the engineering there. And thanks to Adam for all his great work on the app. And we'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 to 9 a.m. Captain Taro Takeuchi from the Liberty will be right here in the world headquarters of Let's Talk Hookup. Let's head over to the Fisherman's Landing Tackle Sale right now. And we'll see you tomorrow morning right back here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio and the Let's Talk Hookup app.